for a while, and then they overtook him. An old man, small and bent. He carried on his back an old army rucksack with a blanket roll tied across the top of it, and he tapped along with a peeled stick for a cane. When he saw them, he veered to the side of the road and turned and stood warily. He had a filthy towel tied under his jaw, as if he suffered from a toothache, and even by their new world standards, he smelled terrible.
"I don't have anything," he said. "You can look if you want."
"We're not robbers." He leaned one ear forward.
"What?"
he called. "I said, we're not robbers."
"What are you?"
They'd no way to answer the question. He wiped his nose with the back of his wrist and stood waiting. He had no shoes at all, and his feet were wrapped in rags and cardboard, tied with green twine, and any number of layers of vile clothing showed through the tears and holes in it. Of a sudden, he seemed to wilt even further. He leaned on his cane and lowered himself into the road where he sat among the ashes with one hand over his head. He looked like a pile of rags fallen off a cart. They came forward and stood looking down at him.
"Sir," the man said.
"Sir." The boy squatted and put a hand on his shoulder.
"He's scared, Papa. The man's scared."
He looked up the road and down.
"If this is an ambush, he goes first," he said.
"He's just scared, Papa."
"Tell him we won't hurt him."
The old man shook his head from side to side, his fingers laced in his filthy hair. The boy looked up at his father.
"Maybe he thinks we're not real."
"What does he think we are?"
"I don't know."
"We can't stay here. We have to go."
"He's scared, Papa."
"I don't think you should touch him."
"Maybe we could give him something to eat."
He stood looking off down the road.
"Damn," he whispered.
He looked down at the old man. Perhaps he'd turn into a god and they to trees.
"All right," he said.
He untied the tarp and folded it back and rummaged through the canned goods and came up with a tin of fruit cocktail and took the can opener from his pocket and opened the tin and folded back the lid and walked over and squatted and handed it to the boy.
"What about a spoon?"
"He's not getting a spoon."
The boy took the tin and handed it to the old man.
"Take it," he whispered. "Here."
The old man raised his eyes and looked at the boy. The boy gestured at him with the tin. He looked like someone trying to feed a vulture broken in the road.
"It's okay," he said.
The old man lowered his hand from his head. He blinked, gray-blue eyes half buried in the thin and sooty creases of his skin.
"Take it,"
the boy said. He reached with his scrawny claws and took it and held it to his chest.
"Eat it,"
the boy said.
"It's good."
He made tipping motions with his hands. The old man looked down at the tin. He took a fresh grip and lifted it, his nose wrinkling. His long and yellowed claws scrabbled at the metal. Then he tipped it and drank. The juice ran down his filthy beard. He lowered the can, chewing with difficulty. He jerked his head when he swallowed.
"Look, Papa,"
the boy whispered.
"I see," the man said.
The boy turned and looked at him.
"I know what the question is," the man said. "The answer's no."
"What's the question?"
"Can we keep him?" "We can't."
"I know."
"You know?"
"Yeah."
"All right."
"Can we give him something else?"
"Let's see how he does with this."
They watched him eat. When he was done, he sat holding the empty tin and looking down into it as if more might appear.
"What do you want to give him?"
"What do you think he should have?"
"I don't think he should have anything. What do you want to give him?"
We could cook something on the stove. He could eat with us.
You're talking about stopping for the night.
Yeah.
He looked down at the old man, and he looked at the road. All right, he said. But then tomorrow we go on. The boy didn't answer. That's the best deal you're going to get.
Okay.
Okay means okay. It doesn't mean we negotiate another deal tomorrow.
What's negotiate?
It means talk about it some more and come up with some other deal. There is no other deal. This is it.
Okay.
Okay. They helped the old man to his feet and handed him his cane. He didn't weigh 100 pounds. He stood looking about uncertainly. The man took the tin from him and slung it into the woods. The old man tried to hand him the cane, but he pushed it away. When did you eat last? He said.
I don't know.
You don't remember.
I ate just now.
Do you want to eat with us?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Eat what?
Maybe some beef stew with crackers and coffee.
What do I have to do?
Tell us where the world went.
What?
You don't have to do anything. Can you walk okay?
I can walk.
He looked down at the boy.
Are you a little boy?
He said. The boy looked at his father.
What does he look like? His father said.
I don't know. I can't see good.
Can you see me?
I can tell someone's there.
Good. We need to get going.
He looked at the boy. Don't hold his hand, he said. He can't see. Don't hold his hand.
Let's go.
Where are we going?
The old man said.
We're going to eat.
He nodded and reached out with his cane and tapped tentatively at the road.
How old are you?
I'm 90.
No, you're not.
Okay.
Is that what you tell people?
What people?
Any people.
I guess so.
So they won't hurt you?
Yes.
Does it work?
No.
What's in your pack?
Nothing. You can look.
I know I can look. What's in there?
Nothing. Just some stuff.
Nothing to eat?
No.
What's your name?
Eli.
Eli what?
What's wrong with Eli?
Nothing. Let's go.
They bivouacked in the woods much nearer to the road than he would have liked. He had to drag the cart while the boy steered from behind, and they built a fire for the old man to warm himself, though he didn't much like that either. They ate, and the old man sat wrapped in his solitary quilt and gripped his spoon like a child. They had only 2 cups, and he drank his coffee from the bowl he'd eaten from, his thumbs hooked over the rim, sitting like a starved and threadbare Buddha staring into the coals.
You can't go with us, you know, the man said.
He nodded.
How long have you been on the road?
I was always on the road. You can't stay in one place.
How do you live?
I just keep going. I knew this was coming.
You knew it was coming?
Yeah. This or something like it. I always believed in it.
Did you try to get ready for it?
No. What would you do?
I don't know.
People were always getting ready for tomorrow. I didn't believe in that. Tomorrow wasn't getting ready for them. It didn't even know they were there.
I guess not.
Even if you knew what to do, you wouldn't know what to do. You wouldn't know if you wanted to do it or not. Suppose you were the last one left. Suppose you did that to yourself.
Do you wish you'd die?
No. But I might wish I'd died. When you're alive, you've always got that ahead of you.
Or you might wish you'd never been born.
Well, Beggars can't be choosers.
You think that'd be asking too much?
What's done is done. Anyway, it's foolish to ask for luxuries in times like these.
I guess so.
Nobody wants to be here, and nobody wants to leave.
He lifted his head and looked across the fire at the boy. Then he looked at the man. The man could see his small eyes watching him in the firelight. God, what those eyes saw. He got up to pile more wood on the fire, and he raked the coals back from the dead leaves. The red sparks rose in a shudder and died in the blackness overhead. The old man drank the last of his coffee and set the bowl before him and leaned toward the heat with his hands out. The man watched him.
How would you know if you were the last man on earth? He said.
I don't guess you'd know it. You'd just be it.
Nobody would know it.
It wouldn't make any difference. When you die, it's the same as if everybody else did, too.
I guess God would know it. Is that it?
There's no God.
No?
There's no God, and we are his prophets.
I don't understand how you're still alive. How do you eat?
I don't know.
You don't know?
People give you things.
People give you things?
Yes.
To eat?
To eat, yes.
No, they don't.
You did.
No, I didn't. The boy did.
There's other people on the road. You're not the only ones.
Are you the only one?
The old man peered warily.
What do you mean?
He said.
Are there people with you?
What people?
Any people.
There's not any people. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about you. About what line of work you might be in.
The old man didn't answer.
I suppose you want to go with us.
Go with you?
Yes.
You won't take me with you.
You don't want to go.
I wouldn't have even come this far, but I was hungry.
The people that gave you food, where are they?
There's not any people. I just made that up.
What else did you make up?
I'm just on the road, same as you. No different.
Is your name really Eli?
No.
You don't want to say your name?
I don't want to say it.
Why?
I couldn't trust you with it. To do something with it. I don't want anybody talking about me. To say where I was or what I said when I was there. I mean, you could talk about me, maybe, but nobody could say that it was me. I could be anybody. I think in times like these, the less said, the better. If something had happened, and we were survivors, and we met on the road, then we'd have something to talk about. But we're not. So we don't. Do we?
I don't know.
You just don't want to say in front of the boy.
You're not a shill for a pack of road agents.
I'm not anything. I'll leave if you want me to. I can find the road.
You don't have to leave.
I've not seen a fire in a long time, that's all. I live like an animal. You don't want to know the things I've eaten. When I saw that boy, I thought that I'd died.
You thought he was an angel?
I didn't know what he was. I never thought to see a child again. I didn't know that would happen.
What if I said that he's a god? The old man shook his head.
I'm past all that now,
he said.
I have been for years. Where men can't live, gods fare no better. You'll see. It's better to be alone. So I hope that's not true what you said. Because To be on the road with the last god would be a terrible thing. So I hope it's not true. Things will be better when everybody's gone.
They will?
Sure they will.
Better for who?
Everybody.
Everybody.
Sure. We'll all be better off. We'll all breathe easier.
Well, that's good to know.
Yes, it is. When we're all gone at last, then there'll be nobody here but death, and his days will be numbered too. He'll be out in the road there with nothing to do and nobody to do it to. He'll say, "Where'd everybody go?" And that's how it will be. What's wrong with that?
In the morning, they stood in the road, and he and the boy argued about what to give the old man. In the end, he didn't get much, some cans of vegetables and a fruit. Finally, the boy just went over to the edge of the road and sat in the ashes. The old man fitted the tins into his knapsack and fastened the straps.
"You should thank him, you know," the man said. "I wouldn't have given you anything."
"Maybe I should, and maybe I shouldn't."
"Why wouldn't you?"
"I wouldn't have given him mine."
"You don't care if it hurts his feelings?"
"Will it hurt his feelings?"
"No. That's not why he did it."
"Why did he do it?"
He looked over at the boy, and he looked at the old man.
"You wouldn't understand," he said. "I'm not sure I do."
"Maybe he believes in God."
"I don't know what he believes in."
"He'll get over it."
"No, he won't."
The old man didn't answer. He looked around at the day.
"You won't wish us luck either, will you?" the man said.
"I don't know what that would mean, what luck looks like. Who would know such a thing?"
Then all went on. When he looked back, the old man had set out with his cane, tapping his way, dwindling slowly on the road behind them like some storybook peddler from an antique time, dark and bent and spider-thin, and soon to vanish forever. The boy never looked back at all. In the early afternoon, they spread their tarp on the road and sat and ate a cold lunch. The man watched him.
"Are you talking?" he said.
"Yes."
"But you're not happy."
"I'm okay."
"When we're out of food, you'll have more time to think about it."
The boy didn't answer. They ate. He looked back up the road. After a while, he said,
"I know, but I won't remember it the way you do."
"Probably not."
"I didn't say you were wrong."
"Even if you thought it."
"It's okay."
"Yeah," the man said. "Well, there's not a lot of good news on the road in times like these."
"You shouldn't make fun of him."
"Okay."
"He's going to die."
"I know."
"Can we go now?"
"Yeah," the man said. "We can go."
In the night, he woke in the cold dark, coughing, and he coughed till his chest was raw. He leaned to the fire and blew on the coals, and he put on more wood and rose and walked away from the camp as far as the light would carry him. He knelt in the dry leaves and ash with the blanket wrapped about his shoulders, and after a while, the coughing began to subside. He thought about the old man out there somewhere. He looked back at the camp through the black palings of the trees. He hoped the boy had gone back to sleep. He knelt there, wheezing softly, his hands on his knees.
"I am going to die," he said. "Tell me how I'm to do that."
The day following, they trekked on till almost dark. He could find no place to make a fire. When he lifted the tank from the cart, he thought that it felt light. He sat and turned the valve, but the valve was already on. He turned the little knob on the burner. Nothing. He leaned and listened. He tried both valves again in their combinations. The tank was empty. He squatted there with his hands folded into a fist against his forehead, his eyes closed. After a while, he raised his head and just sat there, staring out at the cold and darkening woods. They ate a cold supper of cornbread and beans and francs from a tin. The boy asked him how the tank had gone empty so soon, but he said that it just had.
He said it would last for weeks.
I know.
But it's just been a few days.
I was wrong. They ate in silence. After a while, the boy said,
I forgot to turn off the valve, didn't I?
It's not your fault. I should have checked. The boy set his plate down on the tarp. He looked away. It's not your fault. You have to turn off both valves. The threads were supposed to be sealed with Teflon tape, or it would leak, and I didn't do it. It's my fault. I didn't tell you.
There wasn't any tape, though, was there?
It's not your fault. They plodded on, thin and filthy as street addicts, cowled in their blankets against the cold and their breath smoking, shuffling through the black and silky drifts. They were crossing the broad coastal plain where the secular winds drove them in howling clouds of ash to find shelter where they could. Houses or barns or under the bank of a roadside ditch with the blankets pulled over their heads and the noon sky black as the cellars of hell. He held the boy against him, cold to the bone.
Don't lose heart, he said. We'll be all right.
The land was gullied and eroded and barren. The bones of dead creatures sprawled in the washes, middens of sodden trash. Farmhouses in the fields scoured of their paint, and the clapboards spooned and sprung from the wall studs. All of it shadowless and without feature. The road descended through a jungle of dead kudzu, a marsh where the dead reeds lay over the water. Beyond the edge of the fields, the sullen haze hung over earth and sky alike. By late afternoon it had begun to snow, and they went on with the tarp over them and the wet snow hissing on the plastic. He'd slept little in weeks. When he woke in the morning, the boy wasn't there, and he sat up with a pistol in his hand, and then stood and looked for him, but he wasn't in sight. He pulled on his shoes and walked out to the edge of the trees. Bleak dawn in the east. The alien sun commencing its cold transit. He saw the boy coming at a run across the fields.
Papa, he called. There's a train in the woods.
A train?
Yes.
A real train?
Yes. Come on.
You didn't go up to it, did you?
No, just a little. Come on.
There's nobody there?
No, I don't think so. I came to get you.
Is there an engine?
Yes, a big diesel.
They crossed the field and entered the woods on the far side. The tracks came down out of the country on a banked rise and ran through the woods. The locomotive was a diesel electric, and there were 8 stainless steel passenger coaches behind it. He took hold of the boy's hand.
Let's just sit and watch, he said.
They sat on the embankment and waited. Nothing moved. He handed the pistol to the boy.
You take it, Papa,
the boy said. No, that's not the deal. Take it. He took the pistol and sat with it in his lap, and the man went down the right of way and stood looking at the train. He crossed the tracks to the other side and walked down the length of the cars. When he came out from behind the last coach, he waved for the boy to come, and the boy rose and put the pistol in his belt. Everything was covered in ash. The aisles littered. Suitcases stood open in the seats where they'd been lifted down from the overhead racks and rifled by scavengers long ago. In the club car, he found a stack of paper plates, and he blew the dust from them and put them inside his parka. And that was all.
How'd it get here, Papa?
I don't know. I guess someone was taking it south, a group of people. This is probably where they ran out of fuel.
Has it been here for a long time?
Yes, I think so. A pretty long time. They went through the last of the cars and then walked up the track to the locomotive and climbed up to the catwalk. Rust and scaling paint. They pushed into the cab, and he blew away the ash from the engineer's seat and put the boy at the controls. The controls were very simple, little to do but push the throttle lever forward. He made train noises and diesel horn noises, but he wasn't sure what these might mean to the boy. After a while, they just looked out through the silted glass to where the track curved away in the waste of weeds. If they saw different worlds, what they knew was the same, that the train would sit there slowly decomposing for all eternity, and that no train would ever run again.
Can we go, Papa?
Yes, of course we can. They began to come upon from time to time small cairns of rock by the roadside. They were signs in gypsy language, lost patterns. The first he'd seen in some while, common in the north, leading out of the looted and exhausted cities, hopeless messages to loved ones lost and dead. By then, all stores of food had given out, and murder was everywhere upon the land. The world soon to be largely populated by those who would eat your children in front of your eyes, and the cities themselves held by a corps of blackened looters who tunneled among the ruins and crawled from the rubble white of tooth and eye, carrying charred and anonymous tins of food in nylon nets, like shoppers in the commissaries of hell. The soft black talc blew through the streets like squid ink uncoiling along a sea floor, and the cold crept down and the dark came early, and the scavengers passing down the steep canyons with their torches trod silky holes in the drifted ash that closed behind them silently as eyes. Out on the roads, the pilgrims sank down and fell over and died, and the bleak and shrouded earth went trundling past the sun and returned again, as trackless and as unremarked as the path of any nameless sister world in the ancient dark beyond. Long before they reached the coast, their stores were already getting low. The country was stripped and plundered years ago, and they found nothing in the houses and buildings by the roadside. He found a telephone directory in a filling station, and he wrote the name of the town on their map with a pencil. They sat on the curb in front of the building and ate crackers and looked for the town on the map, but they couldn't find it. He sorted through the sections and looked again. Finally, he showed the boy. They were some 50 miles west of where he'd thought. He drew stick figures on the map. "This is us," he said. The boy traced the route to the sea with his finger.
"How long will it take us to get there?" he said.
2 weeks, 3.
"Is it blue?"
"The sea? I don't know. It used to be."
The boy nodded. He sat looking at the map. The man watched him. He thought he knew what that was about. He'd pored over maps as a child, keeping one finger on the town where he lived, just as he would look up his family in the phone directory. Themselves among others, everything in its place, justified in the world.
"Come on," he said. "We should go."
In the late afternoon, it began to rain. They left the road and took a dirt drive through a field and spent the night in a shed. The shed had a concrete floor, and at the far end stood some empty steel drums. He blocked the doors with the drums and built a fire in the floor, and he made beds out of some flattened cardboard boxes. The rain drummed all night on the steel roof overhead. When he woke, the fire had burned down, and it was very cold. The boy was sitting up, wrapped in his blanket.
What is it?
Nothing. I had a bad dream.
What did you dream about?
Nothing.
Are you okay?
No.
He put his arms around him and held him.
It's okay, he said.
I was crying, but you didn't wake up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just so tired.
I meant in the dream.
In the morning when he woke, the rain had stopped. He listened to the slack drip of water. He shifted his hips on the hard concrete and looked out through the boards at the gray country. The boy was still sleeping. Water dripped in puddles in the floor. Small bubbles appeared and skated and vanished again. In a town in the Piedmont, they'd slept in a place like this and listened to the rain. There was an old-fashioned drugstore there, with a black marble counter and chrome stools with tattered plastic seats patched with electrical tape. The pharmacy was looted, but the store itself was oddly intact. Expensive electronic equipment sat unmolested on the shelves. He stood looking the place over. Sundries, notions.
What are these?
He took the boy's hand and led him out, but the boy had already seen it. A human head beneath a cake bell at the end of the counter. Desiccated, wearing a ball cap. Dried eyes turned sadly inward.
Did he dream this? He did not.
He rose and knelt and blew at the ashes and dragged up the burned board ends and got the fire going.
There are other good guys. You said so.
Yes.
So where are they?
They're hiding.
Who are they hiding from?
From each other.
Are there lots of them?
We don't know.
But some.
Some, yes.
Is that true?
Yes, that's true.
But it might not be true.
I think it's true.
Okay.
You don't believe me?
I believe you.
Okay.
I always believe you.
I don't think so.
Yes, I do. I have to.
They hiked back down to the highway through the mud. Smell of earth and wet ash in the rain. Dark water in the roadside ditch, sucking out of an iron culvert into a pool. In the yard, a plastic deer. Late the day following, they entered a small town where three men stepped from behind a truck and stood in the road before them, emaciated, clothed in rags, holding lengths of pipe.
What have you got in the basket?
He leveled the pistol at them. They stood. The boy clung to his coat. No one spoke. He set the cart forward again, and they moved to the side of the road. He had the boy take the cart, and he walked backwards, keeping the pistol on them. He tried to look like any common migratory killer, but his heart was hammering, and he knew he was going to start coughing. They drifted back into the road and stood watching. He put the pistol in his belt and turned and took the cart. At the top of the rise, when he looked back, they were still standing there. He told the boy to push the cart, and he walked out through a yard to where he could see back down the road. But they weren't there anymore. The boy was very scared. He laid the gun on top of the tarp and took the cart, and they went on. They lay in a field until dark, watching the road, but no one came. It was very cold. When it was too dark to see, they got the cart and stumbled back to the road, and he got the blankets out, and they wrapped themselves up and went on, feeling out the paving under their feet. One wheel on the cart had developed a periodic squeak, but there was nothing to be done about it. They struggled on for some hours, and then floundered off through the roadside brush and lay shivering and exhausted on the cold ground and slept till day. When he woke, he was sick. He'd come down with a fever, and they lay in the woods like fugitives, nowhere to build a fire, nowhere safe. The boy sat in the leaves watching him, his eyes brimming.
"Are you going to die, Papa?" he said. "Are you going to die?"
"No. I'm just sick.
I'm really scared.
I know. It's all right. I'm gonna get better. You'll see. His dreams brightened. The vanished world returned. Kin, long dead, washed up and cast fey sidewise looks upon him. None spoke. He thought of his life so long ago. A gray day in a foreign city where he stood in a window and watched the street below. Behind him, on a wooden table, a small lamp burned. On the table, books and papers. It had begun to rain, and a cat at the corner turned and crossed the sidewalk and sat beneath the cafe awning. There was a woman at a table there with her head in her hands. Years later, he'd stood in the charred ruins of a library where blackened books lay in pools of water, shelves tipped over, some rage at the lies arranged in their thousands, row on row. He picked up one of the books and thumbed through the heavy, bloated pages. He'd not have thought the value of the smallest thing predicated on a world to come. It surprised him. That the space which these things occupied was itself an expectation. He let the book fall and took a last look around and made his way out into the cold gray light. 3 days. Four. He slept poorly, and then the racking cough woke him, rasping suck of air. "I'm sorry," he said to the pitiless dark.
"It's okay," said the boy.
He got the little oil lamp lit and left it sitting on a rock, and he rose and shuffled out through the leaves, shrouded in his blankets. The boy whispered for him not to go.
"Just a little ways," he said. "Not far. I'll hear you if you call."
If the lamp should blow out, he couldn't find his way back. He'd have to call for the boy. He sat in the leaves at the top of the hill and looked into the blackness. Nothing to see. No wind. In the past, when he walked out like that and sat looking over the country where it lay in just the faintest visible shape where the lost moon tracked the caustic waste, he'd sometimes see a light, dim and shapeless in the murk, across a river or deep in the blackened quadrants of a burned city. In the morning, sometimes he'd return with the binoculars and glass the countryside for any sign of smoke, but he never saw any. Standing at the edge of a winter field among rough men, he was the boy's age, a bit older, watching while they opened up the rocky hillside ground with pick and mattock and brought to light a great bolus of serpents, perhaps 100 in number, collected there for a common warmth, the dull tubes of them beginning to move sluggishly in the cold, hard light, like the bowels of some great beast exposed to the day. The men poured gasoline on them and burned them alive, having no remedy for evil, but only for the image of it as they conceived it to be. The burning snakes twisted horribly, and some crawled burning across the floor of the grotto to illuminate its darker recesses. As they were mute, there were no screams of pain, and the men watched them burn and writhe and blacken in just such silence themselves. And they disbanded in silence in the winter dusk, each with his own thoughts, to go home to their suppers. One night the boy woke from a dream and wouldn't tell him what it was.
"You don't have to tell me," the man said. "It's all right."
"I'm scared."
"It's all right."
"No, it's not."
"It's just a dream."
"I'm really scared."
"I know."
The boy turned away. The man held him.
"Listen to me," he said.
"What?"
"When your dreams are of some world that never was, or of some world that never will be, and you're happy again, then you'll have given up. Do you understand? And you can't give up. I won't let you."
When they set out again, he was very weak, and for all his speeches, he'd become more faint of heart than he'd been in years. Filthy with diarrhea, leaning on the bar handle of the shopping cart. He looked at the boy out of his sunken, haggard eyes. Some new distance between them. He could feel it. In 2 days' time, they came upon a country where firestorms had passed, leaving mile on mile of burn. A cake of ash in the roadway, inches deep and hard going with the cart. The blacktop underneath had buckled in the heat and then set back again. He leaned on the handle and looked down the long straight of way. The thin trees half down, the waterways a gray sludge, a blackened jackstraw land. Beyond a crossroads in that wilderness, they began to come upon the possessions of travelers abandoned in the road years ago. Boxes and bags, everything melted and black. Old plastic suitcases curled shapeless in the heat. Here and there, the imprint of things wrested out of the tar by scavengers. A mile on, and they began to come upon the dead. Figures half mired in the black top, clutching themselves, mouths howling. He put his hand on the boy's shoulder. "Take my hand," he said. "I don't think you should see this."
"What you put in your head is there forever?"
"Yes."
"It's okay, Papa."
"It's okay."
"They're already there."
"I don't want you to look."
"They'll still be there."
He stopped and leaned on the cart. He looked down the road, and he looked at the boy.
So strangely untroubled. "Why don't we just go on?"
the boy said. "Yes."
"Okay." "They were trying to get away, weren't they, Papa?"
"Yes, they were."
"Why didn't they leave the road?"
"They couldn't. Everything was on fire." They picked their way among the mummied figures, the black skin stretched upon the bones, and their faces split and shrunken on their skulls, like victims of some ghastly and vacuuming. Passing them in silence down that silent corridor, through the drifting ash where they struggled forever in the road's cold coagulate. They passed through the site of a roadside hamlet burned to nothing. Some metal storage tanks, a few standing flues of blackened brick. There were gray slag pools of melted glass in the ditches, and the raw light wires lay in rusting skeins for miles along the edge of the roadway. He was coughing every step of it. He saw the boy watching him. He was what the boy thought about. Well, should he? They sat in the road and ate leftover skillet bread, hard as biscuit, and their last can of tuna fish. He opened a can of prunes and they passed it between them. The boy held the tin up and drained the last of the juice and then sat with the tin in his lap and passed his forefinger around the inside of it and put his finger in his mouth.
"Don't cut your finger," the man said.
"You always say that."
"I know."
He watched him lick the lid of the tin with great care, like a cat licking its reflection in a glass.
"Stop watching me," he said.
"Okay."
He folded down the lid of the can and set it in the road before him.
"What?" he said. "What is it?"
"Nothing."
"Tell me."
"I think there's someone following us."
"That's what I thought."
"That's what you thought?"
"Yes, that's what I thought you were going to say. What do you want to do?"
"I don't know."
"What do you think?"
"Let's just go. We should hide our trash."
"Because they'll think we have lots of food."
"Yes."
"And they'll try to kill us."
"They won't kill us."
"They might try to."
"We're okay."
"Okay."
"I think we should lay in the weeds for them. See who they are."
"And how many?"
"And how many, yes."
"Okay."
If we can get across the creek, we could go up on the bluffs there and watch the road.
Okay,
we'll find a place.
They rose and piled their blankets in the cart.
Get the tin, the man said.
It was late into the long twilight before the road crossed the creek. They trundled over the bridge and pushed the cart out through the woods, looking for some place to leave it where it wouldn't be seen. They stood looking back at the road in the dusk.
What if we put it under the bridge? The boy said. What if they go down there for water?
How far back do you think they are?
I don't know.
It's getting dark,
I know.
What if they go by in the dark?
Let's just find a place where we can watch. It's not dark yet.
They hid the cart and went up the slope among the rocks, carrying their blankets, and they dug themselves in where they could see back down the road through the trees for perhaps half a mile. They were sheltered from the wind, and they wrapped themselves in their blankets and took turns watching. But after a while, the boy was asleep. He was almost asleep himself when he saw a figure appear at the top of the road and stand there. Soon, two more appeared. Then a fourth. They stood and grouped. Then they came on. He could just make them out in the deep dusk. He thought they might stop soon, and he wished he'd found a place further from the road. If they stopped at the bridge, it would be a long, cold night. They came down the road and crossed the bridge, three men and a woman. The woman walked with a waddling gait, and as she approached, he could see that she was pregnant. The men carried packs on their backs, and the woman carried a small cloth suitcase. All of them wretched-looking beyond description, their breath steaming softly. They crossed the bridge and continued on down the road and vanished one by one into the waiting darkness. It was a long night anyway. When it was light enough to see, he pulled on his shoes and rose and wrapped one of the blankets around him and walked out and stood looking at the road below. The bare iron-colored wood in the fields beyond, the corrugate shapes of old harrow troughs, still faintly visible, cotton perhaps. The boy was sleeping, and he went down to the cart and got the map and the bottle of water and a can of fruit from their small stores, and he came back and sat in the blankets and studied the map.
"You always think we've gone further than we have," the boy said. He moved his finger. "Here, then."
"More."
"Here."
"Okay."
He folded up the limp and rotting pages. "Okay," he said. They sat looking out through the trees at the road below.
"Do you think that your fathers are watching? That they mark you in their ledger book?"
"Against what?"
"There is no book. And your fathers are dead in the ground."
The country went from pine to live oak and pine. Magnolias, trees as dead as any. He picked up one of the heavy leaves and crushed it in his hand to powder, and let the powder sift through his fingers. On the road, early the day following, they'd not gone far when the boy pulled at his sleeve and they stopped and stood. A thin stem of smoke was rising out of the woods ahead. They stood watching.
"What should we do, Papa?"
"Maybe we should take a look."
"Let's just keep going."
"What if they're going the same way we are?"
"So?"
the boy said. "We're going to have them behind us. I'd like to know who it is."
"What if it's an army?"
"It's just a small fire."
"Why don't we just wait?"
"We can't wait. We're almost out of food. We have to keep going."
They left the cart in the woods and he checked the rotation of the rounds in the cylinder, the wooden and the true. They stood, listening. The smoke stood vertically in the still air, no sound of any kind. The leaves were soft from the recent rains and quiet underfoot. He turned and looked at the boy, the small, dirty face wide with fear.
They circled the fire at a distance, the boy holding onto his hand. He crouched and put his arm around him, and they listened for a long time.
"I think they've gone," he whispered.
"What?"
"I think they're gone. They probably had a lookout.
It could be a trap, Papa."
"Okay. Let's just wait a while." They waited.
They could see the smoke through the trees. A wind had begun to trouble the top of the spire, and the smoke shifted, and they could smell it. They could smell something cooking.
"Let's circle around," the man said.
"Can I hold your hand?"
"Yes, of course you can."
The woods were just burned trunks. There was nothing to see.
"I think they saw us," the man said. "I think they saw us and ran away. They saw we had a gun."
"They left their food cooking."
"Yes."
"Let's take a look."
"It's really scary, Papa."
"There's no one here."
"It's okay."
They walked into the little clearing, the boy clutching his hand. They'd taken everything with them, except whatever black thing was skewered over the coals. He was standing there checking the entire perimeter when the boy turned and buried his face in his parka and held on. He looked quickly to see what it was.
"What is it?" he said.
"What is it?"
The boy shook his head.
"Oh, Papa," he said.
He turned and looked again. What the boy had seen was a charred human infant, gutted and blackening on the spit. He bent and picked the boy up and started for the road with him, holding him close.
"I'm sorry," he whispered. "I'm sorry."
He didn't know if he'd ever speak again. They camped by a river, and he sat by the fire, listening to the water running in the dark. It wasn't a safe place, because the sound of the river masked any other, but he thought it would cheer the boy up. They ate the last of their provisions, and he sat studying the map. He measured the road with a piece of string, and looked at it, and measured again. Still, a long way to the coast. He didn't know what they'd find when they got there. He shuffled the sections together and put them back in the plastic bag and sat staring into the coals. The following day, they crossed the river by a narrow iron bridge and entered an old mill town. They went through the wooden houses, but they found nothing. A man sat on a porch in his coveralls, dead for years. He looked a straw man set out to announce some holiday. They went down the long dark wall of the mill, the windows bricked up, the fine black soot raced along the street before them. Odd things scattered by the side of the road, electrical appliances, furniture, tools, things abandoned long ago by pilgrims en route to their several and collective deaths. Even a year ago, the boy might sometimes pick up something and carry it with him for a while, but he didn't do that anymore. They sat and rested and drank the last of their good water and left the plastic jerry jug standing in the road. The boy said,
"If we had that little baby, he could go with us."
"Yes, it could."
"Where did they find it?"
"I don't know."
"But there could be another one somewhere, couldn't there?"
"I don't know. It's possible."
"I'm sorry about what I said about those people."
"What people?"
"Those people that got burned up. They were struck in the road and got burned up."
"I didn't know that you said anything bad."
"It wasn't bad. Can we go now?"
"Okay. You want to ride in the cart?"
"It's okay."
"Why don't you ride for a while?"
"I don't want to. It's okay."
Slow water in the flat country. The sloughs by the roadside motionless and gray. The coastal plain rivers in leaden serpentine across the wasted farmland. They went on. Ahead in the road was a dip and a stand of cane.
"I think there's a bridge there," he said. "Probably a creek."
"Can we drink the water?"
"We don't have a choice."
"It won't make us sick."
"I don't think so. It could be dry."
"Can I go ahead?"
"Yes, of course you can."
The boy set off down the road. He'd not seen him run in a long time. elbows out, flapping along in his outsized tennis shoes. He stopped and stood watching, biting his lip. The water was little more than a seep. He could see it moving slightly where it drew down into a concrete tile under the roadway, and he spat into the water and watched to see if it would move. He got a cloth from the cart and a plastic jar, and came back and wrapped the cloth over the mouth of the jar and sank it in the gray water and watched it fill. He raised it up, dripping, and held it to the light. It didn't look too bad. He took the cloth away and handed the jar to the boy.
"Go ahead," he said.
The boy drank and handed it back.
"Drink some more."
"You drink some, Papa."
"Okay."
They sat filtering the ash from the water and drinking until they could hold no more. The boy lay back in the grass.
"We need to go."
"I'm really tired."
"I know."
He sat watching him. They'd not eaten in 2 days. In 2 more, they'd begin to get weak. He climbed the bank through the cane to check the road. Dark and black and trackless where it crossed the open country, the winds had swept the ash and dust from the surface. Rich lands at one time, no sign of life anywhere. It was no country that he knew, the names of the towns or the rivers.
"Come on," he said. "We have to go."
They slept more and more. More than once they woke, sprawled in the road like traffic victims. The sleep of death. He sat up, reaching about him for the pistol. In the leaden evening, he stood leaning with his elbows on the cart handle and looking across the fields at a house, perhaps a mile away. It was the boy who'd seen it, shifting in and out of the curtain of soot like a house in some uncertain dream.